aesthetically pleasing. There's several situations, people having surgery and different things going on here at our congregation, and be with those that need you right now. Help them be able to lean on us and help us to encourage them, Father. Please forgive us of our sins. In Jesus' name, amen.
Amen. Thank you, sir.
Patty Miller's mother passed away.
Right.
You know, it's yesterday afternoon.
Yeah, right. Okay, our study continues to be the topic, what the Bible says about money. As I said last week, I've got about four or five, maybe six different sections I want us to look at here. We spent about 5 weeks on the first section, just some introductory material. I'd like to spend just maybe 2 to 3 weeks per section after that. And if you were with us last week, you know that we began part two, which is a biblical perspective on debt. Now, we talked about this last week. I've got a lot more I want to say about it today. But then I have some things I want us to look at as far as solutions for debt problems. And so I'm going to do the best I can to get through that middle part today so that we can look at our solutions next week. And then we'll wrap up part two and be ready to move on to something else. But we don't want to hurry through this either, because this is some very important material that we're looking at now. We introduced our study last week in the form of a couple of questions. Is it wrong to owe money, or is it wrong to lend or borrow money? If you were with us last week, then I think you know that we looked at many scriptures that would answer the questions that no, it's not wrong to owe money. It's not wrong to borrow or lend money. Wrong not to pay it back, and not to do it in a timely way that you've promised or vowed, but as far as not owing anyone anything at any time, we looked at that last week. I want us to begin today by going back to, if you remember in our introductory material in the first 5 weeks, we looked at two what we call bedrock principles. The first one was that God owns it all. The second one was that I want my money to serve me, not the other way around. So I want us to begin our class today looking at that second bedrock principle. We're going to kind of build on some of that today. Wendell Winkler was asked one time, I think it may have been on an anniversary that he and Betty were celebrating, and I believe this came through the polishing the pulpit or something there, but I have this list. He was asked for his advice on marriage, and he gave a list of do's and don'ts, and number one on his list was, don't accumulate excessive debt. Interesting advice for a marriage. Newlyweds, or somebody that's been married 34 years, in the case of Teresa and me, don't accumulate excessive debt. So, with that in mind, let's talk about this. Last week we looked at a statement on the PowerPoint that said debt that spirals out of control. Now, let me emphasize here. Remember last week we gave the example of the forest fire and the fire in the fireplace. Out of control versus in control. We're not talking about debt in general here. We're talking specifically about debt that's out of control. Debt that spirals out of control means we've stopped working for God and we begin working for the ones to whom we are indebted. We talked about this last week, but I want you to think about this as we think, as we focus on that second bedrock principle that we mentioned earlier. My money serves me and not the other way around. Let's look at a couple of passages here. One is Proverbs 22:7. The borrower is servant to the lender. The borrower is servant to the lender. In 2 Peter 2:19, the NIV version, I don't use the NIV regularly, but I'm going to refer to it today in some passages we look at because of the way that it renders those passages. 2 Peter 2:19, the NIV says, a man is a slave to whatever has mastered him. So we got to be careful here with debt. We got to be careful, because if we're not, then if we don't keep our debt under control, then we can say whatever we want to, But this is not happening up here. It's going to be the other way around if we don't keep our debt under control. So, now with those thoughts, I want to just list some things on the board here. The average American family, do you consider yourself average? Well, most of us would like to think we are. The average American family, if we sat down and looked at your bills or your budget, this is what the average American family would look like. You got a mortgage. You probably got this, maybe even that. Car notes, but a car note, probably. It's not all unusual to find this. Maybe a second mortgage that you're paying on. Then, we're going to talk about this more in time to come a little bit. Credit cards. We've mentioned here that the average household debt in credit cards right now is $8,000. Well, there's a lot of people that owe a lot more than that in order for that to wind up being the average. We're going to talk about that a little bit later on. And then I'm going to put a category up here just called consumer debts. That might be a payment that you're making on furniture or the kids' braces or a new refrigerator or something like that. What we have here is the average, maybe a mortgage, maybe two, maybe car notes, maybe two, credit cards, maybe more than one, and consumer debts. Now think about this in terms of the commitment we've made, if that describes us. Now I'm not criticizing, I'm not saying that, what I'm saying is this is the average household right here. But what happens is we've made a commitment here and we have to generate a lot of money each month just to meet our commitments. Okay? Now this is what's called in finance, this is called debt service. That's what all of this right here winds up being. And we have to generate a lot of income each month just to meet our debt service. In other words, just to get back even. Almost, just to get your head above water. So I want to keep this in mind as we also, I want to go back, I'm not going to say very much about it right now, but I keep that in front of us, that 10-10-80 idea. Mentioned that a few weeks ago. We want to get to the point where we can live 10-10-80. That means we live on 80% of our income. But I told you that 43% of Americans. Now, are you average? Well, a whole lot. 43% of Americans spend more than they make. I mentioned the show Till Debt Do Us Part. I happened to flip by that on the channels last night, and I stopped on it a minute. And the couple that this lady was working with, Till Debt Do Us Part, made $7,000 a month income. When she figured up their bills, they were spending $14,000 a month.
That much sleeping going on.
43% of Americans, the statistics say, spend more. Now, that case may be extreme, spending twice as much. But no matter, if you spend more than what's coming in, you got a debt problem. See, and we'll just talk about this, and again, we're going to talk about solutions to it as well. Adrian, come in.
I think over my lifetime, a lot of what I see is causing a lot of people, whether it's friends or whatever, if me and Mary really had to have an automobile, and we go get a car, then my friends will look what they got. Let's go get one better than that, you know. As long as you don't sit here and say, you know, I'm going to get the same thing they got, or I want one better, or I want a bigger house, he's got, you know. But a lot of people have that problem.
Yeah.
I know I got one friend that does.
Go back to Wendell. I pull a comment back from a class that he had a long time ago. And I go back over here to this. Wendell made a statement one time in class. Now, you can agree or disagree. He made the statement. He made a statement in class one time that if you have a car payment, you drive too much car. Interesting to think about that. We're going to talk a little bit more about that when we come to it.
But.
Well, I appreciate Adrian making.
What other people have, I ain't never let it bother me too much. As long as I got what I need, they can have whatever they want. It don't bother me.
Yeah. Well, that's the attitude we really need to have. I appreciate you bringing up those comments, and I really appreciate these younger people that's in our class today, because, you know, you can make some big changes early on in life, and it'll make a big difference. I'll say this. If you're in a situation that's taken you, and Teresa and I have been married 34 years, if it's taken you 34 years to get to where you are, you ain't going to get that fixed overnight. But good news is it won't take you 34 years to fix it. And that, so I want us to talk about some solutions here. I'm getting way ahead of myself here, so let me back up. Okay, let's go back here to this debt service idea. I wrote down here a cute bumper sticker that I saw that said, I owe, so off to work I go. You know, that really describes all of us a little bit. But now here's a question for us. Based on what we've just kind of used up here, I want us to do this. Are you servicing your debt each month? Or are you serving your debt? Now, going back to the idea of my money serves me, not the other way around. And I want us to be real, real honest with ourselves as we talk about this. If we've got a debt problem, let's address it. Okay, another thing I want to put up here is this, instant gratification. Because here's what I think Adrian is talking about there, about you want a house when you can't afford a house, or you want a car that's maybe a little bit out of your reach because a friend has one like that. And it all really kind of goes back to this idea of instant gratification. We live in a buy now, pay later culture. And if any of you here are involved in selling furniture, I apologize for the example I'm about to use. But look at all these commercials that you see on TV about buy the furniture now, and you don't have to make your first payment till maybe 2 years from now. I hope it's good furniture, because it may be worn out by the time you start paying on it. But it's buy now and pay later. Instant gratification is the idea. Well, let's see what the Bible has to say about that. Proverbs 21:17 says, "He who loves pleasure will be a poor man." This is instant gratification. He who loves pleasure will be a poor man. This lifestyle will eventually come back to be destructive on you. Now, we're going to talk more about self-control a little bit later on, but I can't help but just mention it. We've got to have some measure of self-control, or instant gratification is going to kill us debt-wise. We've got to have some measure of self-control. 2 Peter 1:5 says, "Add to your faith virtue, and to your virtue knowledge, and to your knowledge what? Self-control." Or some of the older versions say temperance. We've got to have that self-control. All right, let's open our Bibles together here, and let's go to Mark chapter 4. Mark chapter 4. Now, Mark chapter 4 has the parable of, my Bible says it's the parable of the sower. I would prefer to call it the parable of the soils. But you have that familiar parable here in Mark chapter 4. And then it's a little bit unusual because Jesus explains the parable. We don't have to wonder what it meant. He tells us what it meant. Beginning in verse 13, he says, in verse 14, he says, "The sower sows the word." In verse 15, says, "Those that by the wayside." And then verse 17 says, talks about those on stony ground. But I want to go down to verse 18. Let's look at this this particular type of soil that we've talked about. Now, these are the ones sown among thorns. They are the ones who hear the word, and the cares of the world, the deceitfulness of riches, and the desires for other things entering in choke the word, and it becomes unfruitful. We shudder when we read about all of these types here that receive the word. The first type is the hard heart that wouldn't receive the word. But then the second type received the word, but it didn't take root because it was stony ground. This particular type receives the word, but it doesn't take root because there's something that chokes it out. We've received the word. Are we going to allow this something to choke it out? Let's look at what it is. Well, go back into the verse in verse 19. And what's the first thing listed? The cares of the world. There's some things that can choke out our Christianity and cost us our salvation. God gives us three of them here in this passage. One is the cares of the world. Well, you go back to Matthew 6:25, and he says, why worry about those things? Why take thought, or why worry about what you're going to eat, or what you're going to drink, or what you're going to wear? Because he says life is more than food and clothing. Life is more than that. Cares of the world. The second thing he talks about is the deceitfulness of riches. Now, if you go back to 1 Timothy chapter 6, when we talked about that passage, remember it talked about those that would trust in, what's the word? Uncertain riches. Here we talk about deceitful riches. Hebrews 3:13 says, lest any of you be hardened through the deceitfulness of sin. Sin is deceitful. Sin will tell you one thing, it'll trap you with one thing, but then the result is an entirely something different. It's deceitful. Well, this passage here says riches are the same way. Riches are deceitful because prosperity tends to give us a false sense of security. And then thirdly here in this passage it says the desires for other things. And now Luke's account of this says the pleasures of life. If we go back and think about Proverbs 21:17, when it says, he who loves pleasure will be a poor man, Luke says the desires are the pleasures of life here. So we've got three things here that really can choke out our Christianity and cost us our salvation if we're not careful. Now I've got something here I want to throw up on the board. If you're taking notes, don't worry about taking notes on this, because I'm going to give you I'm going to give you something to take home with you today. I'm going to give you a test. A take-home test, okay? This test that I give you, though, is actually 20 questions that you answer, and it comes from, I'm going to give you some websites later on as well, but there's a website called nfcc.org, and this is the National Foundation of Credit Counseling, and there's a lot of interesting material there that you can get off of this website, tools that will help you. And there's a test that I'm going to give you to take home with you today. You answer the questions, and it'll identify whether you have a debt situation yourself. But I'm going to throw some questions up here on the PowerPoint for us to talk about a little bit. What are the possible signs of debt problems? Now, you may say, well, I don't owe any money. I don't have a debt problem. How you answer these questions here might say whether you have the propensity to have a debt problem or not. And especially if you're younger, I would urge you to give heed to these kind of questions. The first one is, do you pay only the minimum on credit card balances? Now, I want us to look at some examples. I'm not going to do it right now, but we'll come back to credit cards maybe later today, early next week. Come back to credit cards and we'll talk about this. Minimum example. I can't help but throw this in. The average interest rate on credit cards is between 12 and 22%. It's going to fall in there somewhere. I found an example on the internet of a credit card company that charges 79.9% interest. It's targeted mainly for people with credit problems, okay?
Because
But if you take that credit card out, you're probably going to have to. We'll come back and talk a little more about this. Do you pay only the minimum on credit card balances? Just answer in your mind yourself. Do you get cash advances on credit cards to pay other expenses? The third one, do you fail to keep your checkbook balanced? Do you balance your checkbook? The fourth one, do you acknowledge... The fourth one is, do you acknowledge that you have no savings account? Or, if you have a savings account, do you ever use savings to pay your credit card bills? Six, do you send in payments past the due date? Seven, do you avoid opening your mail? Talk about ostrich in the head in the sand. Just put it aside. Don't open it. Eight. I've got 10 of them. Do you put money in the bank after you've paid your bills to cover the checks that you've written?
You can't card them like you used to.
Nine. Nine. Do you wait until the last minute to pay your taxes? Now, I'm going to have to take an issue on nine a little bit here. A little bit. If you're the intent of it here in our discussion is having to wait till the last minute because you hadn't got the money to pay your taxes and you wait till the last minute. That's the intent. I would have to take issue with saying if you owe taxes, then wait till the last minute. That's the CPA and Gary and the financial person and myself to say. I'll have to put a little qualifier on number nine a little bit.
The last day. And there's an error in your, say you forgot to put.
That sounds like the voice of experience.
if you forgot, or the accountant forgot to put down one of your salary, or somebody, you know.
And you signed it.
And you sign it, you send it off, and you pay a penalty.
Yeah. That's true. Okay. And number ten. I want to look at number ten. Do you have family conflicts over money? Now these are just general questions that if you answer yes to some of these, if you pay only the minimum on credit cards, or if you get savings out to pay your credit card bills, and talking maybe regularity, in regularity, but do you have family conflicts over money? These kind of things are just questions that might help you realize whether you have a debt problem or not, or whether you might be inclined to have a debt problem. I would say in number 10, I can give you some examples of that. I can give you personal examples of that. I have a family member who divorced after 30-something years of marriage because his wife, not one time, but two times, had sunk them deeply in debt without his knowledge. And he was a very, very firm, good financial manager. But all of a sudden, here comes something up where he owes thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars that she has run up credit card bills and with nothing to show for it. And he had to take and do that. It's my older brothers who I'm talking about. He had to take and fix that one time. And then He took all the credit cards, he locked his checkbook up under lock and key. Now this is a marriage, and for some reason, a few years later it happened again. Thousands of dollars, and they divorced when it happened the second time. She got a lot of the stuff, and it was gone within just a very short time because she couldn't manage it. So family conflicts over money. I know another situation here, not in our congregation, but locally, you would know them if I call their names, where the woman handled all the finances. The man didn't know anything about what was going on, and the woman would get income tax refunds each year and tell her husband that it's one thing when really it was many, many times more than that's what she was getting. So just, family issues can come into play there. He probably was getting what he deserved. Now, maybe I shouldn't have said that, but he shouldn't have been that naive letting that kind of thing go.
Forget to say it. Most of us have forgotten.
would love to have had this lesson 35 years ago. This lesson needs to be taught to the high school and the college kids before they ever get to the point of getting married.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I agree wholeheartedly, Kitty. I really do. It's there, the Bible. God has laid out plans for us that if we would only follow them, we would only follow them. Y'all are not going to let me get through.
I don't know who the teacher was at County High that taught math. And
was it me?
I don't know Coach if it was algebra class or consumer class or math or whatever. But my son had this lesson about credit cards. And my son was as scared of a credit card, knowing what it could do to you and how much you had to pay on interest. He learned that lesson. And he has never been bothered. But
thank you, Mary. You just made my day. Because I had Randy and I had Randall in
algebra, and I know, but I had
him in some math class, I know.
Well, my daughter didn't have that lesson.
Well, I'm sorry. Comments.
One of the most common things I see at work, like what you were saying, they don't tell exactly how much they get back or make, is not just men doing it, but it is more common that I see men doing it, is can't get them to do direct deposit to save their life because they don't want their wife to check how much they make every month. They'll come, or the women do it too, but cash their checks and then just put some of it in the bank, keep the rest so the other spouse doesn't know.
I don't want to get on this too far right now, but lest I forget to talk about this later, and this is not marriage counseling, but really, a husband and wife has to be a team in all things, and financially speaking, it has to be. Now, I'm not telling you that what you ought to be doing, but I'm saying that in my home, Teresa and I sit down every year in December, and we look at our budget, and we change it, and we do all of this, and we make decisions together with unity about this is how much we want to give to this cause, and this is how much we want to do here, and this is how fast we want to pay on the mortgage or the house payment or whatever, together. But those kind of things need to be done together. And I'm not going to criticize you if you've got separate checking accounts, but that just wouldn't work at my house. You know, it just wouldn't work for me. I just couldn't feel good about that. But there's one other thing I wanted to say. Yeah, this is it. I ran across something, putting this material together here, that I thought was interesting. And it said that a husband and wife ought to come up with a figure of how much money you could spend without checking with the other person. And it said if you were a newlywed and, like Teresa and me, didn't have money to buy groceries when we were first married, it might be $10. I mean, it might be just nothing. But you make a commitment to one another that we won't spend over that money, that amount of money, without the other person's knowledge previously. And if later in life when you've got a lot of money, it may be a situation for somebody to go buy them a new car. I mean, whatever you decide as a husband and wife, this is the amount of money that we can spend, that I can spend as a husband without running it by Teresa. It's not an issue. This much money is not an issue. This much money, that would be an issue. So we need to talk about that. We're getting too far into marriage counseling here, and I don't want to do that.
Instant gratification. If we think it's a problem for our age group, let me tell you, the teenagers and the preteens right now have no clue. Every time they want to talk to someone, they can reach them instantly. It's not like it used to be, well, I'll call when we get home from the grocery store and see what. It's instantly. It's online. It's on their phones. Their phones connect instantly to every Facebook message, to every email, to every text. The second they want to know anything, they pull the phone out and bring it up.
But who permits
They have that? No concept. Well, my children don't have those, but all their friends do, and they use their friends, and they're still addicted to the instant gratification. Yeah. They don't have the phones that connect to the internet. But they don't understand. My kids will even ask me, I can sit down and make them pay bills with me to see how this process works. And the very next week they will still say, well, they all have those $125 buckle jeans. Why can't I have a pair? The money's not there. Well, then use a credit card. Excuse me, no. But you see what I'm saying? These kids don't have a clue. And at 11 and 12, they think they can have anything and everything.
Don't want this to be a, I don't want this to turn into a personal class at all. At all. But when our two boys were at home, when they got to be, they weren't very old. They were young teenagers when we turned their clothing allowance over to them. It's yours. You spend it how you want it. And maybe the whole family's allowance was $100 a month, so they wasn't going to buy $125 jeans unless they saved many months to get to that point. And they took care of that.
Another comment.
Yes, sir. It made me laugh when you were talking about calling each other on spending a certain amount, because when me and Joel first got married, I went to buy a lab coat for work because mom was just dingy. I sent him a message and I was like, do you mind if I buy this lab coat? It's $25. And he put laugh out loud. He's like, honey, you don't have to ask me for $25. Well, I mean, because it's both of our money now.
Well,
and I just did it out of respect because I didn't want him to look and be wondering where the money's going. And I mean, I know it was just $25, but still, I mean, it's his money as much as it is mine.
Right.
And I just wanted to be respectful and ask.
I don't know,
and he
where
was like,
we,
we'll put a limit.
I don't know
on
where
it.
We heard that, but Carrie and I did that, and it really had, when we were first married, it really has saved us a lot of.
To come up with a figure,
yeah,
that.
And it has changed
that's
somewhat
agreed
over,
sure,
the course of years, but that is a great idea.
Yeah.
For, especially
I think it is too.
Married.
Yes.
Kitty said something about high school and college age children. As a parent, one of the best things you can do is tell your children when they're planning to be married, you need to go to premarital counseling. This is,
yeah,
where a lot of these things, if the counselor does his job,
right,
this is where a lot of those things are discussed.
Well, I've been tremendously blessed through the years in that I married someone who thought like I did. I mean, we are in full agreement on issues. I feel sorry for people who are in a marriage that have two opposite thinkers. You've got one that wants to do this or that, you know, and then you got somebody else that has completely different thoughts. And so maybe a lot of that would take care of it through some premarital counseling and discuss those issues beforehand. Lavelle.
Well, I find that I just have a debit card, but if I deduct that as quick as I get home, you'll be more balanced in your budget.
Right. Also going to make
as
a comment.
Older, you forget.
Also going to make a comment or two about debit cards and credit cards, and I bet when I do that I'll have a 50-50 split in this class about some pros and cons of both of those, but we'll save that for another time. Billy, don't let class run out till we give that thing out here. Okay, let's do this. Point number one. Let's go back to the first point we made. No, let's wait for him. We'll give it to him now. They'll be ready. Okay. I got some important stuff right here. Point number one that we made last week, and we gave this out with a lot of scripture. Debt is not sinful. Okay, but before you enter into debt, I got two questions you need to ask yourself. Before you enter into debt, you need to answer these two questions. Question number one, what are my motives? In other words, why are you taking on this ophelo? Remember that Greek word in Romans where it says, oh no man, ophelo, obligation. Obligate, you're obliged. Something that has to be paid back. Why are you taking on that obligation? Ask yourself the question, what are my motives? Now let me share two verses with you quickly. Romans 12, 2 and 3. Verse 2 is very familiar to us. We remember it quickly. Be not conformed to this world. What is your motive? Is your motive, as was pointed out earlier in class today, to keep up with your neighbors or to have something that you know, your neighbor drives such and such car, I want to drive such and such car. What are your motives? Only you can answer that. Be not conformed to this world. Verse 3 of Romans 12 says, for I say through the grace given to me to everyone who's among you not to think of himself more highly than he ought to think. Thinking highly of yourself. What is your motive? Now the second verse I want us to refer to is Matthew 6, 1 and 2. familiar to us as well, part of the Sermon on the Mount. Take heed that you do not your charitable deeds before men to be seen of them, etc. What is your motive? Before you enter into a debt obligation, question number one, what's your motive? Question number two is, how will I repay the money I'm borrowing? Never enter into a debt situation until you look at your finances and know that you can pay it back. Don't enter into that if you're already like this right here. If you're already part of this 43% that's spending now more than you earn, then you can't enter into another debt obligation. And I would even say in the 10-10-80, if you've maxed out 80, you can't afford another debt obligation. So the second question here is, how will I repay the money I'm borrowing? Listen to what the Bible says about this. Psalms 37, verse 21 says, the wicked borrows and does not repay. Ecclesiastes 5:5 says, better not to vow than to vow and not pay. Proverbs 3:27 and 28. Do not withhold good from those to whom it is due, when it is in the power of your hand to do so. Do not say to your neighbor, go and come back, and tomorrow I will give it, when you have it with you. Pay what you owe in a timely manner. And lastly, Proverbs 27:26 and 27 says, do not be one of those who shakes hands in a pledge, one who puts up security for debts if you have nothing with which to pay. Proverbs 3:22, 26, and 27 answers the question right there. You better have a plan on how to get it paid back and it be within your means as you're doing that. Those are the two questions I would ask before I entered into debt. Okay, recommended websites. I told you I was going to make a couple of recommendations here.
Vow not to pay. To me, would that be wrong? Lots of churches, you pledge that you're going to give so much. Wouldn't that be the same thing?
No. It's not saying don't vow. And it's not saying don't make a pledge. It's saying don't make a pledge and not honor it and not follow through with it. There are a lot of churches, and in fact, we've talked about it here, and I'd like for us to do it here. It would be so much easier to budget things if we could know how much someone was planning. A pledge is really just a plan. How much are you planning on giving to the church? There's nothing wrong with that. You know, if something happens and your situation changes. Well, then you might not be able to do it because it's violating your conscience.
I mean, I might pledge it that that's in my heart that I want to do
right.
This amount of money.
Right.
Oh, that's your problem.
But I don't think for
right.
you to be like if the church was expecting that money and something come up and you couldn't do it, for them to come and ask, well, you pledged this. Why are you not doing it?
Well, hopefully it wouldn't come to that. But anyway, I think the question was, though, is it wrong to pledge? Is it wrong to make a vow? And that's not the intent of this. That's not the intent of this verse. This verse right here says, don't vow and then fail to follow through with it and pay it. Okay, just some recommended websites here for you. I'm getting close. This one I gave to you earlier, the National Foundation of Credit Counselors.org. A lot of information on there. Another one is getoutofdebt.org. That's interesting. There's a place that's got a lot of interesting things on here. And the last one here is, you see this thing on TV all the time about freecreditreport.com or something like this, these commercials. Well, pardon my English here, but there ain't no such thing as a free credit report. However, there is a free credit report. You just won't find it at freecreditreport.com. Annualcreditreport.com you can get your credit information there. Now, it's interesting, or you really ought to make a trip to this maybe yearly or more often than that, just to keep a check on your, because of identity theft, keep a check on your credit records, because people now are stealing your identity, and you might see some things that's happening on your credit that you didn't do and be able to cut it off there before it's too late. So that may be a little different discussion there. Bill.
This, what we've discussed here, will destroy a home, a marriage, but it will also destroy a country, which we are experiencing right now.
And don't get me started. Well, the same principles are true nationwide as it is for the home. I mean, you know, that's exactly right. Very good.
I was coming back from class one night and listening to one of these parents' gurus. He had one really good idea on this free annual credit report. Put it on your calendar.
Yeah.
Once a quarter, order one in each of the three agencies.
Right.
That way you keep on getting free, and they're all the different ones
recorded. Right. That's a good idea. I went on this one last night. I went on this one last night and printed mine out. Just hadn't done it in a while, and it's pretty easy. You have to put your Social Security number in there. You have to put some information in it. But it is a reputable site, and you'll get a good report out of that. John?
I want to go back to something you said a while ago.
Yes.
And if you have issues with your spouse where you can't trust one another with their money,
yeah. You
got a lot to issue if you do your marriage, you should be looking at the ministry then what you're talking about.
That's correct. That's exactly right. Didn't quite get through today. Alexa, you got a comment quickly?
I was just going to say that if you don't get your credit with more, which is what everybody wants.
Yeah. Your credit report is what you really want. Yeah. Take a sheet with you, take it home, and you and your husband or whatever, look at it.
All right.
Got close. Yeah. They called them Friday and told them that they could give it up. Thank you, sir.
What's the word? Talent. And money. So, is that the same thing?
In the Bible time it was. In the Bible time it was.
What time we in?
Well, we think of talents now as abilities. I think the same lessons apply, but abilities and what, you know, my gifts or my talent, I have a talent to play music, you know what I'm saying? But in the Bible, the talents was he gave him 10 talents, he gave 5 talents, he gave 1 talent.
I've got a brother-in-law, he's probably a multimillionaire. He works 7 days a week, 18 hours a day. Yeah. Earning his health. Hadn't started going to Social Security yet, 71.
Is he waiting on?
I don't know. But he can't stay away from his business, making more money. I don't know if he'll do nothing like that.
Yeah.
But anyway, he thinks if he's making all this money, he don't have to go to church. But if the church has to have money to operate, you know, and that's his